That's where the left has a problem. They've become the party of the faculty lounge. They're so condescending. They're so arrogant. And again, not to beat the dead horse, the whole point is to be exclusionary. They're not accidentally exclusionary. It's the mission statement.
Well, the voters reciprocated and made them exclusionary.
Gave the party of the faculty lounge an F grade last week in their final exam, right?
And there's the exit door right over there. Welcome, everybody, to this Veterans Day edition of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, thanks to our radio legend, Mark Christopher, all of the songs that we play going in and coming back from commercial break today are songs that have been performed by veterans.
The list is going to surprise you.
Or about veterans.
Yeah. Now you're all thinking, oh, Elvis, obviously. No offense. Love the Elvis. We play him often, but I'm going to play some of these artists you're going to go, I never knew.
They were in the military.
They were in the military at one time or another.
Chris Christopherson that passed away just a few weeks ago. He was a military veteran.
There you go.
Helicopter pilot, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
By the way, we started celebrating our veterans a little early.
How was Saturday?
Oh, what a wonderful.
I saw some video.
Parade on Saturday. Mark, of course, was the MC for the entire parade.
17 years since I've been back, and I told everybody, and some people remember, you know, Mark, when you did it, it never rained on this parade. It's raining like crazy here. At 8:30 in the morning, I said, it's not going to rain. Watch. And what happened a half hour before the parade started at 11 a.m. with that flyover of the Globemaster III and the King County Sheriff Chopper? Wasn't he flying low? The rain stopped. The pavement was dry for the KVI. What, you were on the Nimitz aircraft carrier?
We were on
the
Nimitz float.
Right.
Which they brought all the way down from the Oak Harbor Museum.
Yeah, oh, the Naval. Sure.
Okay. The Naval Museum up at Oak Harbor. They're about to move into nicer, well, not nicer, bigger and nicer
digs. The PBY Naval Museum. That is a remote boat. If you saw John on that huge aircraft carrier on the trailer, that is like a remote little boat. But anyway, the rain stopped. It's dry pavement, the whole parade, about 1:30, parade ended, and what happened? The rain hit.
Oh, no kidding.
So they were like, okay, Mark, maybe next year you can come back. You seem to have a little magic here.
Now, I think I've been in that parade for about 20 years now.
150 units, 2,100 people. The marching bands, you see the size of those?
Oh, my goodness.
Ballard High, and Bellevue.
And they came all the way from eastern Washington.
Wenatchee.
For this parade. It turns out the parade in Auburn, downtown Auburn, is the largest veterans parade west of the Mississippi.
Yeah, major event.
Second to New York, and we're the only one with a flyover that kicks it off.
And you can do that when you've got a Joint Base Lewis-McChord nearby, can't you?
Naval Station would be,
So to those of you who showed up, boy, I hope you felt as inspired as I did.
I didn't get a chance to attend. I had to be out of town Saturday and Sunday for a kid football soccer event. They had to play back east in Idaho, if you can believe this. So I was in Coeur d'Alene and Post Falls, Idaho over the weekend. Want to take a guess at what I paid for a gallon of gasoline on the other side of the state line?
Here it comes.
Okay, I'm going to guess $2.89 a
gallon. Dang!
Am I close?
You have your finger on the pulse of prices. $2.84 a gallon.
Oh, hey.
Are you kidding?
Can you imagine if I 2117 had passed last week and the cap and invest bogus ripoff tax scheme, hidden gas tax that Jay Inslee and the Democrats and the Olympia legislature have imposed on us.
Wow.
We could be looking at gas prices that are closer to $3 a gallon. But instead, you're paying through the nose. Congratulations, voters.
Yes. By the way, let me let all KVI listeners in on a news scoop. Okay, something that hasn't hit the airwaves or the newspapers anywhere. Brian Haywood is not going away. Brian Haywood is sticking around, and he's ready for another go-round.
Thank goodness.
Okay? So for those of you who thought, well, maybe, you know, Brian's is just going to do... Maybe he heard that ad by Kirby Wilbur on KVI, and he's going to pack up now and move.
He wasn't persuaded.
No.
Okay.
In fact, he's invigorated. It took 40 $1 million for them to assault.
Of Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer's money.
With
amongst
with
others.
Lots of wealthy people's money. The real wealth of Election Day in Washington State was, of course, on the side of it was an interesting coalition between the filthy rich and the most ethically challenged unions in terms of having a checkered record for telling the truth. They formed a coalition to try and sink all four of the initiatives. And yeah, they did get three of them. They knocked down three of them. The one that passed is one that will change politics here in Washington. Because what was happening is that the Inslee administration had started kind of a 1-2 dance where they would have the Building Code Council, a regulatory body, redefine the standards to make it illegal to have new natural gas hookups for homes or for buildings, including restaurants, some of which have to use natural gas. And then you had that bill passed at 2 o'clock in the morning, the second to last day of session. I believe it was House Bill 1589. And what have I told you about bills that pass in the middle of the night? They're never good. They're always sneaky. They're always conniving. They always have an agenda that has no relation to the title of the bill. Okay? That bill set in motion a slow motion ban on natural gas for existing customers. So they're banning it for new customers and eventually, you know, spiking the price deliberately of natural gas for existing customers and then phasing it out. This at a time when they've already declared war on coal, and they've already declared war on oil, and they've showed zero interest in nuclear power, even though this is all being done in the name of climate change and carbon dioxide emissions. Carbon dioxide is not a poison. It's what you exhale. It's what plants inhale. Basically, it's plant food. And again, at a time with the increasing population, the increasing number of e-cars, though not as fast as they had wanted or expected, and these massive data centers, which require huge amounts of power to operate, they're not in calling for increasing amounts of clean burning natural gas. They're trying to phase it out. That's just stupid. I mean, 2 + 2 = 5, stupid. You don't phase out your most reliable source of clean burning energy at a time you're going to require vast new amounts of energy. So what 2066 does is it basically says the government no longer has the power to do these things. The government no longer has the power to tell utilities they have to phase out natural gas. The government no longer has the power at the Building Code Council to make natural gas hookups. And in fact, we're not going to kick this from state government to local government because this simply isn't something government, period, should be doing. From now on, that power rests in the hands of consumers. Wow. That's what I love about Initiative 2066. That it not only repealed what these terrible legislation and regulation requirements, they went further and said, from now on, this power will rest in the hands of the people. I love that initiative. So that's what that was all about. And, of course, you have to add to that the three initiatives that the legislature were petrified to see will be on the ballot and we no longer have to worry about. Did you know, for instance, you guys, that Seattle was already thinking about passing a citywide version of capital gains tax?
I have some information in your scripts this morning
about
that.
Did not know. Interesting.
That can't happen anymore. You know why it can't happen?
I'm ready for this.
Because one of the six initiatives that Brian Haywood's Let's Go Washington managed to get qualified for the ballot, the anti-income tax initiative, specifies that no income tax as defined by the IRS can be levied at any level of government here in Washington, whether it is progressive or whether it's flat rate, no income tax. Well, the IRS defines capital gains taxes, which is a tax on the income derived from investments, as an income tax. There will be no city income tax in Seattle. So that cut them off at the pass. And then, of course, there is the anti-police chase initiative. That qualified. That is now law. That never would have seen the light of day if not for Brian Haywood and Let's Go Washington. So some huge victories were chalked up. In fact, let me go further. The only victories statewide for Washington taxpayers were these initiatives. And I had dinner with Brian over the weekend. I said, hey, take the long view here. Look at what you have accomplished. This was big. This was huge. And so... Brian Haywood is not going away, in case you were wondering, well, what's he going to do now? His record is 4-3 on these initiatives. Four of them are now law. Three of them did not pass. And he's going to do a deep dive on why those initiatives did not pass. And then he's coming back. There will be more.
Now, confusion too, John.
And you know what? I'm going to be right there with him.
Even at the Veterans Day parade, just talking with people about election, just, you know, hey, how you doing? And they said, those initiatives, I got messed up. I thought I was supposed to vote no to have them go away, but apparently you had to say yes to the repeal.
Yes, yes.
And that was the confusion
yes
there.
Yes, to get rid of. No, yeah. there was a lot of genuine confusion about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And that was part of it. Part of it was the misinformation campaign. It's just, I was stunned at how casually and relentlessly they were lying about these initiatives to try and scare people.
That's the count real quick. 91% votes in, and we're still a yes to repeal for the natural gas hookups in new homes and require existing homes to transition from natural gas to electric.
Well, yeah, so its lead has extended.
Yeah. I had 52% yes, 48% no. That was as of count Saturday.
Yeah.
91% reporting.
So now it's up to 4 points. On election night, it was 1.5 points. And you're thinking, oh, boy, what's going to happen with the next deluge of votes? Well, every single report has increased its lead. So it is going to pass. Oh, my goodness, do we have a whole lot of stuff we got to talk about. You know, today, when I was driving in on a couple, and again, this is on Mercer Way, so this is not, you know, a seldom used road where a lot of water piles up. A lot of water had nevertheless piled up. I felt like I was driving the Miss Bardol, you know, the Miss Budweiser. I had massive wings of water spray on from both sides of the car coming in. No, I did not ride my motorcycle.
And more on the way. We had Lake Spokane over here on the Spokane Viaduct coming out of West Seattle, too.
So, yes, do be careful out there. If you are driving to work today, again, a reminder, no mail service, no schools, no banks. It is Veterans
Day. Lots of discounts for veterans, 10% off at major stores, and a lot of restaurants offering a free meal. Just get online and say, Veterans, deals of the day.
There you go.
See a huge list.
This is your day. Congratulations to all of our veterans. I have a little about the history of Veterans Day coming up. But my goodness, we have a lot of local and national news to talk about. The Trump administration starting to take shape. And my goodness, has the bloodletting started, the recriminations among Democrats. They're not attacking Donald Trump for the time being. They're attacking each other. I've got plenty of popcorn, and we'll play some great excerpts for you today, this morning on the John Carlson Show. It is 19 minutes after 6. You know what that means. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning.
Veteran tribute, Ray Manzarek of the Doors, served U.S. Army.
John Fogerty was in the military?
U.S. Army.
No kidding.
True.
Well, how about that? Congratulations to John Fogerty, still out there on the circuit, the tribal casino circuit, making the hits, singing the hits.
And the group that he inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a spokesperson will be next with a lead who also served in the U.S. Army. When I play it, guess who it'll be?
Love it. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, can you top that with your social media sweep, one of the week?
We'll give it the old college try here, the social media sweep. Sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I've got another presidential election post-mortem, and this one sort of stems from one I think I hit on Friday's show about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders was saying it should come as no great surprise that a Democratic Party, which has abandoned working-class people, would find that the working class has abandoned them. And then somebody in political circles, let me pull up the bio here, co-founder of Yes in My Backyard for Harris. So YIMBYs are basically the pro-mass transit, pro-housing density, no more single-family housing type people that have taken a foothold here in Washington and have already gotten a foothold in California, the Yes in My Backyard movement.
Their view is that people who want a house and yard with a garage
are
selfish.
Exactly. You can't be allowed to do that. You don't have the freedom or latitude to choose that. So this person's name is Armand Domalewski. And Armand said in response to Bernie Sanders, "We had the most pro-labor president in American history, that being Joe Biden, and the working class shifted dramatically to the right while the professional managerial class, the college educated, shifted dramatically to the left. I'm sorry, Bernie, but this just ain't it." So, and I know you've got some audio clips that kind of reinforce a little bit of this shift in support among Democratic voters and how it's changed between Democratic and Republican voters.
Yeah, but basically, mainstream Democrats, you know, people who would say, I'm a Democrat, but who are not liberal or left-wing Democrats, they're finding it easier and easier to simply walk away. That wonderful interview we had with the attorney, King County attorney from Auburn, Kent, Yvonne Kinoshita Ward.
Right, man.
She used to come on the show as someone who disagreed with me, which is why we always love putting her on, because she's so smart.
Mm-hmm.
But she now has walked away from the Democrats and then became an independent and said, you know, that's not enough. I'm going full Republican.
Yeah.
So a lot of voters did exactly what Yvonne did on last Tuesday.
Certainly. One of the people I follow on social media is a Huffington Post writer, Yasher Ali. But he at least seems to have an open mind about a lot of the political machinations of the day. And in relation to the Washington Post writer, Jennifer Rubin, who's kind of a quote-unquote Republican, right? and she's a never-Trumper.
No, she's a witch.
And Jennifer Rubin.
No, she's a thoroughly unpleasant person.
Last week.
She comes off like Margaret Hamilton in The Wizard of Oz.
Okay. Last week, after it was becoming very obvious that Donald Trump was in line to win the election, she posted on social media, "It is 1933. Hitler is in power. No time for a bleeping seminar on Democrats' messaging errors. And Yasher Ali, knowing a little bit about Jennifer Rubin's past history of making political proclamations and predictions and things like that, wrote, "Please put this woman out to pasture. There are many talented columnists who would love to have the Washington Post as their home. She's consistently wrong and dangerously confident in her intellect. The day she blocked me on social media was a relief." So,
yeah, she's one of these people with a very high degree of self-esteem, and you're left wondering why.
You bet. And then I was explaining my experience going over to Idaho and buying gas for $2.84 a gallon. And this ties into something that I'd seen posted last week that's attributed to the Financial Times. And someone posted a 2023 calendar year average electricity price for industrial users in megawatt hours. So the cost of energy. Where do you think in the world the most expensive energy for industrial users might be? Which nation?
Japan.
Good guess. Yeah, they're in the top five.
I was going to say Japan because they don't have natural resources.
Mm-hmm. Have to rely on a lot of outside sources for energy. The United Kingdom is number one.
Australia was.
Germany is number two, but United Kingdom's over $400 per megawatt hour. Germany's closer to $275. So it's a massive distinction there that the United Kingdom is number one. You go down the list, and the United States and Canada are in the lowest five of the major countries that they put in. They're probably somewhere around 17, 18. And then China on this list has the lowest megawatt per hour cost for electricity amongst industrial users. So I think that shows you a little of why their economy can be so potent, is because they've either subsidized or they've managed to bring down the cost of energy for industrial applications. Something to keep in mind when we try and figure out what works and what doesn't work in the United States economy. And for United States consumers, you start making energy too costly, everything becomes more expensive.
Man, I guess. when we come back here on the commute with Carlson, I promised you we would be talking about just how much things are starting to change. Not just here at home, but abroad, as a result of last Tuesday's election. You don't want to miss this. Coming right around the corner.
Don Wilson, veteran, U.S. Army. Way to go, vets. Thank you for your service. Another salute to an artist who was a veteran, Lloyd Price. Thank you, veterans.
Didn't they remake this song?
I'm sure they did. What a fun party song.
A fun party song about a guy getting shot over a gambling debt. Or a gambling dispute. Welcome back, everybody, to The Commute with Carlson at 6:37. You know, so much has happened since last Tuesday's election that your head will swirl. But one guy, you know, took the time to try and make sense of everything that had happened in just the last few days after the election, made a TikTok video of it. Have a listen.
Donald Trump's not even president yet. Have you seen what's happened in the last 48 hours? The misogynist appoints the first ever woman to be chief of staff.
That's Susie Wiles. We talked about Susie Wiles being named his chief of staff. She basically was the de facto campaign manager. This was by far the best run Trump campaign. It tells me that she'll probably be his most effective chief of staff. Remember, he had four of them during his first term. It's kind of stormy, but things are probably going to be operating on a much more even keel here with Susie Wiles. Let's continue.
The Taliban announced they want peace with America and to be taken off the terrorist list. Putin came out and said that Western civilization is not an enemy. Mexico has started securing the border in, of course, response to tariff threats. Saudi Arabia is kicking out all of their Hamas leaders.
That was an actual misstatement. He said Saudi Arabia. He should have said Qatar. Qatar had
little
been,
fact check there. Nicely done.
Yes, it had been hosting Hamas. Hamas's political leadership wasn't in Gaza. Their political leadership was in much more cozier digs in Qatar. And that regime there found it politically beneficial to host Hamas because they didn't have to deal with the military element. They didn't have to host Yahya Sinwar and that group. But they had the political leaders, the diplomats, the administrative arm of Hamas operating out of Qatar. And after Donald Trump won and after Israel continued to flex its muscle, both against Hamas and toward Hezbollah north of Israel, Qatar thought, you know what? Let's just go ahead and toss in our hand now while we can. So they are kicking Hamas's leadership out of that country. I hope they end up back in Gaza where they can be arrested. Let's continue. Or killed, either way.
New York is cleaning up their illegal migrant crisis. Mm-hmm. Xi Jinping came out and said he wants to peacefully coexist with China and said that they respect American people.
He meant peacefully coexist with the United States, but...
The European Union chief finally came out and said, hey, America, can we start buying LNG from you so they stop buying from Russian gas?
Great idea, because we used to sell liquefied natural gas to Europe. We used to do that. We stopped doing it, or at least cut way back on doing it, during the Biden administration for no good reason. I mean, here's how crazy this is. Biden supposedly is anti-oil because of the emissions issue, right? Climate change. And yet he drastically cuts back on the shipping of liquefied natural gas to European countries like Germany. So where does Germany end up having to get its energy? They imported oil from Russia, which, of course, uses the proceeds from the oil sales to help finance its war in Ukraine. So while we, the Biden administration, actually green-lighted an oil pipeline called Nord Stream, the Nord Stream oil pipeline, from Russia to Europe to facilitate oil being sold to Europe while he was discouraging oil pipeline expansions here in the United States. Your head starts spinning after a while. You say, well, wait a minute, how can he be against doing that here in the States? Because of concerns about emissions, while he greenlights a much bigger pipeline from Russia, which is doing it to get the money to fight a war in Ukraine where we're on the side of the Ukrainians. It was just nuts. It was schizoid. And now that policy is going to be reversed. We're going to have more natural gas production in this country, and we're not only going to become self-sufficient in energy again, we are going to create more jobs exporting surplus natural gas to countries so they don't have to import it from Russia.
Putin says he takes Donald Trump's plan to end the war with Ukraine very seriously, and Russia supports it. The Houthis are stepping back. The Hamas called for an immediate end to war. He's calling for term limits in from Congress, so that way people like Nancy Pelosi stop being forever members. Stock markets and crypto hit all-time highs.
All-time highs from the stock market and the NASDAQ and the crypto markets.
Have you heard what...
He sent Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton into depression. Because of all this amazing news, white, liberal, ugly women are now refusing to have sex with men.
Okay. America's... Well, that's hyperbole. But it's also a meme on the internet. A lot of progressive women are saying they should say no to sex with men and no to having children for the next 4 years to make a statement against all the men who voted for Donald Trump. Again, the neurotic way that some people, mostly liberal women, I'm just saying, if you look at the internet, it's unmistakable, are just having complete emotional meltdowns after this election. Not solely liberal women, but mostly. There's plenty of men also. And again, you just have to shake your head and say, okay, keep ranting, keep raving. I don't know how that helps you win. All it does is reinforce the stereotype about how unfit liberals are to govern. All right. It is 45 minutes. What were you saying, Phil?
The Bitcoin price now, something like $81,000 per Bitcoin. And I'm looking back into the end of 2020, and it basically doubled in price from around September 2020. It was late September 2020. It was almost 11,000. And by the end of December 2020, it was at 28,000. So it more than doubled in a couple of months back then.
Right now.
Man, oh, man.
Right now, Dow Jones is up 431.
In this morning's trading? Yeah, okay. Wow.
By the way,
this is why I'm in radio, folks.
those of you with a 401k, especially you Boeing machinists now, you got a huge increase in your 401k. You not only got a huge increase in your 401k from Boeing management, you also check out how much money you've made from Donald Trump winning this election. Go back and check out the Dow Jones. Check out what your 401k was worth a week ago and see what it's worth now. Believe me, if you have a decent amount of money in your 401k and a lot of it is in the stock market, you just made thousands, tens of thousands, if you have a really good size 401k. I love how things are changing already. You see his new director of immigration? Oh my goodness, it's our friend Tom Homan. Tom Homan, who was the voice, he used to be Barack Obama's interim director of Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE. And then he was also part of the Trump administration because he had been outspoken against the increasing movement toward illegal immigration. And then as soon as Biden came in, of course, the increasing movement became a stampede. And one of the guys who continued to stand up and shout back at Congress that they were being derelict in their duties for not stopping the Biden administration from doing all this was Tom Homan. He will be in charge of not only the southern border, but also the northern border. Here is the announcement made last night by President Trump. I'm pleased to announce the former ICE director and stalwart on border control, Tom Homan, will be joining the Trump administration in charge of our nation's borders. The borders are, including but not limited to, the southern border, the northern border, all maritime and aviation security. I've known Tom for a long time. There's nobody better at policing and controlling our borders. Likewise, Tom Homan will be in charge of all deportation of illegal aliens back to their country of origin. Congratulations, Tom. I have no doubt he will do a fantastic and long-awaited-for job. Again, that's in last night from President Trump. It's 49 minutes after 6. Our good buddy Lars Larson checking in right around the corner on the commute with Carlson this morning. Happy Veterans Day. All right, we went into commercial break with Johnny Cash, who was a veteran. And, yeah, back for Jimi Hendrix, also a veteran.
Wasn't he a paratrooper? Or didn't he want to be a paratrooper? Maybe that's what it was.
I didn't know that.
I was going to say, I thought there was something about being a paratrooper there.
Let's parachute in our good buddy Lars Larson right now here on The Commute with Carlson. Good morning, Lars.
Harriet Mills Larson, my mom, now gone, but she was in the U.S. Navy. She was in 1940 through 45, so she served. And as a result, I ended up being born overseas. So.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I was born in a Navy. It would have been a Navy hospital in Taipei, Taiwan. I was made in Taiwan. They did not stencil that on my foot like a lot of products from Taiwan, but I was made in Taiwan.
All right. Lars Larson, I was just telling our listeners last night, Donald Trump announced who's going to be in charge of the border. Tom Homan.
And Tom is a great guest, and Tom is on fire. As he says, Trump is a badass president, and you better watch out because he is going to start sending a message. And I think, John, one of the questions people said, well, how do you deport all of them? You don't have to deport all of them.
No.
Does the IRS have to audit everybody in America to make everybody in America afraid of the IRS?
Of cheating on their taxes? That's a very good comparison. It is very apt. You don't have to, and they didn't during the Eisenhower era, where they removed over a million illegals when there were far fewer in this country. You just have to start doing some enforcement, and have, of course, E-Verify, so it doesn't make sense to try and get a job. That is how you start moving things in the right direction. Lars Larson, our noon to three host here, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So nice to have you aboard. We had a wonderful, wonderful time at the Veterans Day Parade, which is actually the Saturday before Veterans Day, which they've been doing, are you ready for this, for 58 years. One of the largest Veterans Day parades in America, the largest west of the Mississippi. And it's right here in Auburn, Washington. And my goodness, did we have a good-sized crowd.
And again, John, I'm just going to say it's still a sleeping giant. Everybody, Auburn just does a wonderful job with this. This thing has more entries than the Seaford Torchlight Parade. Proof of that. Did you notice the parade marshals from Seafair all along the parade route, John, as you and Big Mike were trucking along in there? And the fact they take the transit center and they open that whole thing up for free parking. So there's plenty of free parking. You're close. Bring the family. Think about it next year. It was fun to be back, John, after 17 years since it's been a duty for me to be the PA announcer. And I'm on a roll still. Every time I've done that parade, the rain stops before the parade, and it comes back after the parade.
I've been in that parade during literally monsoons.
I think that's where I met you and Kirby the first time.
And it was, again, just wonderful. You have a good time anyway. You have a good time anyway when you're at that parade.
Well, they have the marching band competition on the field.
Yeah.
They've got that other area where they've got all the veterans and all the vendors. I mean, you can spend, it goes till 7 o'clock at night. There's so much to do in Auburn.
I never knew there were so many different veterans organizations. And it seems like all of them were there marching. And it was wonderful. There was even, I kid you not, Veterans for Peace. you know, not in our name, no genocide in Gaza. And, okay, it's Veterans Day. Let's all be on our best behavior.
Yeah.
However, I did ask a couple of them, hey, how about that election last Tuesday?
But they had the Civil War, the people that do the encampments there.
Civil War. They had the Buffalo Soldiers.
Buffalo Soldiers. The American Revolution. And again, you're talking authentic rifles and uniforms.
Well, one of the riflemen came up and shook hands. That, by the way, this was also KVI country. Oh, my goodness, was this a friendly place to be on a parade float.
Only parade where you had to fly over there. Thank you, JBLM, there for the Globemaster 3 and King County Sheriffs with that chopper. Man, did you get some loyal ovation there, and we heard you.
It's 707, speaking of planes, 707. Remember the 707?
My dad taught pilots, some of the first pilots to get behind the controls on that baby.
Veterans Day edition of the radio program of record, this 11th day of November. Post office, banks, most government offices, schools, all closed. Today, it's an official holiday. Of course, we have work to do because you're out there. So that's why we're here. Got to start on kind of a dark note here. It didn't get much attention because of all the stuff happening with the presidential election, the statewide elections, the initiatives, legislative, all of the contests going on had distracted people, but there was a terrible, hideous, unprovoked stabbing attack, series of stabbings happening last week at the Chinatown International District. Now, they've got this guy in custody, and he's looking at $2 million bail. But before all that happened, this gives you a sense of the alarm that was growing in, again, Chinatown International District. Here's Como 4's Lin-Ann Nguyen.
Micah Beauregard has been living on the streets of Seattle for about a year now, but says he tries to avoid this area late at night.
People out here are struggling. There doesn't seem to be a lot of help for the homeless people at this point. And so that brews frustration, and out of that frustration comes violence and other things that aren't so good. So, yeah, I try to stay indoors if possible and not be out here because, you know, bullets don't have a name, you know.
Police say a man who appears to be in his 40s had multiple stab wounds in the second stabbing. They brought out a canine to try and find the suspect, but so far no arrests have been made. And though these stabbings happened in the same area, Seattle police have not yet said if they believe both of these stabbings could be related.
Well, they were. And they ended up nailing this guy for 9 stabbings. 9. Around 2 in the afternoon last Friday, man in a black sweatshirt with a white writing on it, not sure what it said, stabbed 5 people on South Jackson Street, 10th between 10th and 12th. The man then ran and then calmly began walking between random targets. Again, there was no motive. There was no robbery was not the motive. He didn't know these people. He wasn't having a beef over something. He just wanted to stab other people. Police say the man, who is identified in the Times as 37, stabbed at least 4 other people that day and the day previous. King County prosecutors describe the suspect's criminal history as extreme, with 9 felony convictions in just the past 10 years. Quote, these attacks were random. They were unprovoked. They occurred in broad daylight, said prosecutor Ian Sletvit. Okay, so here's my question. What the hell is someone who's got 9 felonies in 10 years doing out in the first place? 9 felonies in 10 years. You're supposed to be facing graduated consequences, increasing consequences with every conviction. So again,
nine
I ask.
Nine times.
What is this guy doing out of custody? Why isn't he incarcerated? Again, random attacks during the day. For some reason, the judge granted a motion from his public defender to limit the media, restrict them from filming his face. I don't know why. The man, again, 37, reportedly lived with his uncle in Federal Way and did landscaping work. Grew up in Seattle. The judge had only heard evidence on 5 of the 9 counts, citing an obvious, quote, substantial likelihood, close quote, that the suspect could commit a violent crime in the community. She set his bail, Michelle Gelson, at $2 million. Some of the stabbings were minor cuts. Some of them were severe knife wounds. 4 of the people taken to Harborview were in critical condition. Their conditions, luckily, have been upgraded. Harborview has a very good ER division, one of the country's finest, in part because they get so much practice. Then we have this. You folks up in South Everett probably already know all about this, but a car containing several teenagers was stopped by a police officer. They fled the traffic stop. This was in the wee hours Saturday morning, so as Friday gives way to Saturday. Ran off the road and plowed through a homeless encampment on the side of Airport Road. 3 of the homeless are dead. They were sitting or sleeping at the roadside. 2 more homeless, both young women in their 20s, seriously injured. So, of course, after killing and injuring all these people, these teenagers got out of the car to tend to them. No, of course they didn't do that. The teenagers only thought about themselves and how they could get away. Everett police caught 3 of them. Everett police officer C.J. Hawley said the 3 were identified and held in custody, but later released. They've yet to be charged. Police traffic investigators have not yet identified who's behind the wheel. The occupants were, quote, giving inconsistent accounts, close quote, in other words, lying, and refusing to confirm whether there was a 4th person in the car. Because they are juveniles, new state law. This is one of the new state laws just passed by the one-party extremists in Olympia. Imposes restrictions on how police can conduct in the investigation on scene in the immediate aftermath of the crime being committed. Quote, police are extremely limited in how they interact with juvenile suspects without a defense attorney present. There was no blood alcohol test conducted. Quote, we have to identify who the driver was, said Officer Hawley. Then investigators will determine what crimes are to be charged. We owe it to the families of the victims. Again, three dead, two seriously injured. And the officers who experienced the trauma of this incident, we owe it to them to complete a fair and accurate investigation. At 12:40 in the morning on Saturday, a Snohomish County Sheriff's deputy tried to achieve a traffic stop on the car. Then the car drove off. The deputy did not pursue it. The car kept speeding north on Airport Road, traveled less than a mile before it veered off the road through a homeless encampment, again, killing three, wounding two. One more reason why we have to overhaul how the criminal justice system deals with juvenile criminals. You think this was their first encounter with police? Do you think this was the first time they were caught? And can you believe we're talking three dead bodies and two others in the hospital and they release them? Something very wrong with how we deal with violent juveniles and repeat offenders. It is coming up on 18 minutes after 7 o'clock on The Commute with Carlson. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with a social media sweep. Good to have you with us. Good morning. Now, this is Grateful Dead. See, why is John playing Grateful Dead on Veterans Day? Well, because we're playing hits performed by veterans. And yes, Jerry Garcia, the Grateful Dead, was a veteran. All right, where was he in the service?
Most of which of these artists are pretty much Army and some Marines. I'm not finding much Navy or Air Force.
One of the most distinctive voices in music, Bill Withers. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III, you got 24 minutes now after 7 o'clock in the morning.
Social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. You were talking about this a couple different times on last week's show, and I found a couple of follow-ups about this. But it was universities that were needing a safe space, sometimes for students, but sometimes for faculty. And someone grabbed a screenshot of the Harvard Crimson, the student newspaper at the University, Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the screen grab headline says, "Harvard professors cancel classes as students feel blue after Trump win." And one of the people tweeting this screen grab out is a First Amendment attorney, vice president of campus advocacy at the Peace Corps, or is formerly of the Peace Corps, but is with the group FIRE, which is a more conservative-leaning group, is it not?
Well,
FIRE?
There are probably several organizations that have FIRE, but FIRE is about free speech and free expression on college campuses.
Yeah. Foundation for Individual Rights and Expressions, FIRE. And so this person with FIRE posted, "What are we doing here, guys? College is supposed to get students ready for the real world and model how we get back to work." And then another person picked up on that from Reason.com, a libertarian political site, said, "The over-prioritization of an obsession with mental health is one of the worst cultural trends of the last decade. We have created pride in fragility rather than an emphasis on resilience." And I think that's the dichotomy at play here, that we'll allow these external events to dictate how well we feel to do normal, everyday, day-to-day things, your basic obligations. You know, I have a 16-year-old, almost 17-year-old, junior in high school, and we try to remind him, hey, school is your obligation. That's essentially your job right now. So yeah. That's why you have to kind of undertake that work ethic to achieve and do well in school and take the proper preparation and planning to do what your teachers are asking you. And sometimes, you know, there's an opportunity to go above and beyond and seize that opportunity when you have that chance to do it. But what we saw last week with a lot of this reaction to the election is the opposite direction of that.
And as you point out, not just from students, but from faculty members. You know, look, I was on the UW campus the day after Ronald Reagan shocked the country by winning 44 states and putting Jimmy Carter out to pasture. Okay. I didn't see a single Democrat too distraught, you know, to make it to class.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, people went, you know, they were down in the dumps. Right. Yeah, they were
unhappy. Unexpected, right?
But you know what? They're adults, and they functioned like adults. And this whole idea that you now are infantilizing not just kids, but their professors and staff people on college campuses. Oh, they need cocoa. Oh, they need to play with Legos.
Yeah,
oh, they need a safe space
this departure.
They can deal with all this. No, they don't. They need to get on with their day. They need to get on with life.
Yeah. Now, in Washington, D.C., in the punditry world of cable and talk news, CNN sort of stuff like that, one of the guests on CNN created a way to keep Kamala Harris in power in Washington, D.C. by getting her appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court. I guess this goes in the category of desperate times call for desperate measures. But this is what emerged on CNN last Friday morning. The CNN guest you're going to hear is Bakari Sellers. And here's Bakari Sellers' plan.
So I hope that Joe Biden makes the next 10 weeks as consequential as he can. I don't care about drawing outside the lines or what Republicans may think about it. This is within your purview. You can actually do it, and you should do it. And, you know, one more thing, John, is you have a hell of a vice president right there who has a legal pedigree to sit on the Supreme Court. And let Republicans go crazy and hate I'm even mentioning that option.
Are you floating? This is 7:30 a.m. on the East Coast. Did Bakari Sellers just float Vice President Kamala Harris as a potential Supreme Court nominee?
Not only am I floating it, but I want to stir up everything. I want people's heads to explode this morning so we go into the weekend just knowing that the chaos has not ended just yet.
So that's the ideology. That's the mindset of what can we do to really try and needle the Republicans or jab the Republicans by getting Kamala Harris onto the U.S. Supreme Court in a lame duck session of Congress.
Manifestly unqualified. If Sonia Sotomayor is being pressured to step down.
And that's the side part of the story. It would mean that Justice would have to step down, and there's been pressure on Sonia Sotomayor. Maybe we can convince her to step down and resign and install a new Supreme Court justice.
And I tell you right now, Sonia Sotomayor would say, for her? No, I'll stay put, thank you.
I would hope that she would say something to that effect.
Oh, my Lord.
But, you know, that's what passes for substantive thought on the political punditry that is invited on CNN.
On Bakari Sellers, anyway. Yeah, yeah. It's not a high bar to clear. All right, it's coming up on 7:30, The Commute with Carlson. When we come back, again, the recriminations between Democrats has begun. Some of it reaches here into Washington State. You want to hear this. It's coming right up on The Commute with Carlson.
John and everybody, another artist here, a veteran, Toy Caldwell, lead vocal songwriter, guitarist of the Marshall Tucker Band, U.S. Marines.
Semper Fi.
Another veteran, longtime drummer Artemis Pyle, Lynyrd Skynyrd, U.S. Marine Corps.
Good drummer, too, by the way. I am a Lynyrd Skynyrd fan. All right. It is 24 minutes to 8 o'clock in the morning. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. A little bit later on, what the hell is going on in Amsterdam? Did you guys hear
Does this
about
go back this? To last Thursday's night slash Friday?
Yes.
Well, I guess it would have been very early Friday morning our time, but Friday midday Amsterdam time.
It followed a soccer game where a group of Muslim thugs Thought to be from the Moroccan and Turkish communities in the Netherlands, went out Jew hunting. They went out, again, in the city made famous by the book The Diary of Anne Frank, trying to find Jews to beat up. Anyway, we will get into that a little later on here on the commute. But, boy, check this out. This is Van Jones. Van Jones is an ardently liberal commentator for CNN. But here is how he summed up the Democrats basically bringing all of these problems on themselves that resulted in the Republicans gaining the White House and the United States Senate, and it will soon be announced, the U.S. House of Representatives.
If progressives have a politics that says all white people are racist, all men are toxic, and all billionaires are evil, it's kind of hard to keep them on your side. And so we might want to think about, if you're chasing people out of the party, you can't be mad when they leave. And maybe if we had a different politics, we actually said dignity for everybody, everybody's respected, and we need you, more people might stay.
Yeah, well, yeah. More people might stay. But check out what Jon Favreau from the Pod Save America podcast. It's basically a podcast by ex-Obama officials. What he had to say, and who he blames for the loss.
Joe Biden's decision to run for president again was a catastrophic mistake. It just was. And he and his inner circle, they refused to believe the polls. They refused to believe he was unpopular. They refused to acknowledge until very late that anyone could be upset about inflation. And they just kept telling us that his presidency was historic and it was the greatest economy ever. We just heard him again say that it's the greatest economy ever. Clearly, 70-80% of voters don't believe that. They don't believe that about their own personal financial situation, but they just keep telling us that. And then after the debate, the Biden people told us that the polls were fine and Biden was still the strongest candidate. They were privately telling reporters at the time that Kamala Harris couldn't win. So they were shivving Kamala Harris to reporters while they told everyone else, not a time for an open process, and his vice president can't win, so he's the strongest candidate. Then we find out, when the Biden campaign becomes the Harris campaign, that the Biden campaign's own internal polling at the time when they were telling us he was the strongest candidate showed that Donald Trump was going to win 400 electoral votes. That's what their own internal polling said.
Oh, boy. Well, there's nothing about these people that is decent or honest. The same people. And by the way, they helped make Trump. I can only get so angry at them. They're a big reason why Donald Trump will be taking the oath of office on January 20th. Because, and I was telling you this a year ago, I was telling you that Joe Biden was damaged goods, that he was too old, too infirm. It was showing every day, and it was obviously not going to be getting better, but worse. But the people around him refuse, were propping him up because they didn't want to lose their access to power. Okay, he was their ticket. So what did we keep hearing about Joe Biden? First, that, oh, he's incredibly nimble. Man, he is sharp as a tack, and his energy level is so high. I mean, Kamala Harris is one of the key offenders here. She obviously was hoping that he would be able to get reelected, limp across the finish line, serve a year, maybe two, and then he'd have to pull back and she would get the reins of the presidency and would be able to run as an incumbent next time around. And then came the debate against Donald Trump, and that all went away. And then Biden, who didn't like being pushed to the sidelines by Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and other big ticket financial donors to the party promptly endorsed Kamala Harris. So there would be no competition for the Democrat nomination. And by the way, it would have been hard for them to have competition anyway. It was so late in the day when he finally left. He finally left in July, and the Democrats' convention was in August. So look at how selfish these people were, even while continuing to insist that Biden was the strongest candidate they had. Their own internal polls had them losing by more than Kamala Harris lost by last Tuesday. Kamala Harris has 226 electoral votes. You need 270 to win. Donald Trump has 312. No one was predicting that Donald Trump was going to have that many electoral votes. He overperformed everywhere. I mentioned the other day that Biden won the Catholic vote, which is very substantial. Almost one in five voters are Roman Catholic in this country. Biden won the Catholic vote by 5 points. Donald Trump won the Catholic vote by 18 percentage points. Joe Biden won the youth vote under 34, 18 to 34. Joe Biden won the youth vote by 15 percentage points. Oh, excuse me, I take that back. He won the youth vote by 25 percentage points. Kamala Harris won it by 5. They went from a 25% advantage to an entire sector of the American electorate, young people, to a 5-point advantage. Meanwhile, Donald Trump was increasing his share of the vote from Generation X to baby boomers to post-baby boomers. Not only that, but he had coattails. The Republicans will have not just a Senate majority, they'll have 53 senators. They very nearly ended up with 55. They just barely lost Arizona and Nevada. Trump almost managed to even get Kerry Lake across the finish line, just missed. So there will be 53 Republican senators, and there's going to be a Republican House. You need 218 votes to control the House. The Republicans currently have 220. There's three vacancies, so it's currently 220 to 215. The Republicans currently have 215. They need 218. They have 215. The Democrats have 203. So all the Republicans need are three more Republicans, and they control the House. The Democrats need 15 victories. And by the way, five of the outstanding races where we don't have results yet, five of the races we don't have results yet, the Republican candidate is leading by between 2 points. That's Michelle Steele in California, Southern California, to 22 points. Or excuse me, to 7 points. 7 points. So between 2 points and 7 points. There's another three Republican candidates who have less than a 1-point lead. And then there are, of the 10 remaining races, there are four Democrats with 1 point or less, and six more with between 1.7 and 13 points. So my guess is we're probably looking at the Republicans maybe gaining a couple of congressional seats. This, in a year where the pollsters were telling us that the Democrats stood a 73% chance of retaking the House of Representatives. You know what this means? This means no more of these ridiculous investigative committees. No more using the committee process to carry on assaults against the Trump White House. There will be a united front in the House and the Senate. It means the Democrats won't control the confirmation process. It means they won't control any Supreme Court appointment confirmation hearings in the next couple of years. So this is all very good news. The news far exceeded expectations for the Republicans. It's coming up on 7:48, almost 7:49, The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Willie was a veteran? All right. Happy Veterans Day. Harry Belafonte, a veteran. Later, of course, popular artist and civil rights leader.
I'm looking at another post on social media from the handle Baseball History Nut, and it is Roberto Clemente in United States Marine Corps fatigues, and apparently a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. And I did not know that about Roberto Clemente, the baseball legend. A
lot of great ball players.
Sure, yeah. You go down the list of the greatest generation, sure.
Most particularly Ted Williams.
That was one that came to mind for me.
Who probably lost four seasons serving his country in World War II and then also in Korea. He was a pilot.
Right.
I think a Marine pilot, if I'm not mistaken, but might want to double check on that. Okay, this is Veterans Day. When did this start? It actually started 105 years ago. To celebrate the end of World War I, it was called Armistice Day. But a World War II veteran named Ray Weeks had the idea in 1945 to expand Armistice Day to include all veterans and not just celebrate those who died in World War I. The president, who later found out about it, Dwight D. Eisenhower, thought that was a great idea. And Veterans Day has been the law of the land since 1954. So this is our 60th anniversary celebrating our veterans. By the way, that veteran, Ray Weeks, later received the Presidential Citizenship Medal in 1982 from then-President Ronald Reagan. So Veterans Day is recognized for all American military members, active, retired, deceased, all of them. Active, reserve, retired, guard, we thank you all for your service. And again, one way to mark this day is not only proudly flying the flag and remembering our veterans, thanking God for them, but that great Veterans Parade that they hold every year in Auburn, put it on your calendar for next year, the Saturday before Veterans Day. We'll be there. KVI loves this parade, celebrating our country and our veterans. Hour number three of The Commute, straight. And a very warm welcome to all you veterans, especially listening on this Veterans Day edition of the John Carlson Show, Monday, November 11th edition of the radio program of record. Thank you very much for being with me. You know, when I first heard this, I didn't believe it, and then I saw the source, and I realized it's a very credible source. But you remember the prominent role that Oprah Winfrey, played in this election trying to help Kamala Harris.
Yeah, campaign rallies, big speech at the convention in Chicago.
Big speech. Then she had, remember that town hall, where there were absolutely zero challenging questions.
Was that Michigan? Asked. Is that of, where the audience was? I feel like it might
it
have been.
It was in
Michigan.
One of the swing states.
Yeah.
And then on the eve of the campaign in Philadelphia, another rally where she spoke. Did you know she got paid?
Here it comes.
Did you know she got paid $1 million?
I was going to say, let us guess, but are you kidding?
Wow.
Wow.
Vice President Kamala Harris' campaign paid Oprah Winfrey's Harpo Productions $1 million. Just one example of millions of dollars the campaign spent on various entertainers during the vice president's failed bid for president. You thought all these celebrities were doing it out of the goodness of their heart, out of their conviction that, yes, you're the candidate I want. I'm sure they did want her.
Of the roughly $1 billion in campaign contributions to the Kamala Harris campaign, you're saying $1 million went to pay Oprah for her appearances at least one, if not more, rallies.
That is what the Washington Examiner has reported.
And this is a woman that recently, the Washington, I don't want to say the Post, one of the publications, said net worth for Oprah, $2.97 billion.
Oh, yeah. No, she's been a billionaire for years. So if anyone could have afforded a freebie, I'm guessing it could have been Oprah. Yes, no, she's a billionaire several times over. She was very smart. She not only drew a handsome salary from her talk show all those years, which was the most popular talk show going away.
Yeah, syndicated around the country to hundreds of TV stations.
But she owned the production company
and
the rights to the show, Harpo Productions. So anyway, she's an astute businesswoman. And more astute than I thought in terms of leveraging every advantage to get money here.
This is kind of like the scene in Animal House where Dean Wormer goes to the mayor of the town. You want to have a parade in my town, you have to pay. Carmine, I don't think it's right that you extort money from the university. You say the word extortion again, I'll have your legs broken. You remember?
Sure, we can find some money in the student fund?
Yes, exactly. I'm sure we can find out a way to pay Oprah.
Gratuity from the student fund? I'm sure we can find some money here in the campaign. You know, it's a pretty big budget. But anyway, this was coming after the this was the star-studded town hall that Oprah hosted for Kamala Harris in September. She also appeared at her final rally in Philadelphia on election eve. A very rare endorsement coming from Kamala Harris, from Oprah Winfrey for Kamala Harris. Quote, "We're voting for values and integrity," she said. "We're voting for healing over hate," close quote. Okay, but the list goes on. Kamala Harris made an appearance on she wouldn't go on Joe Rogan, who has far and away the most popular podcast in America. I believe he had 50 million views of his interview with Donald Trump. 50. Another report I saw said 54 million views. I think he has over 18.5 million subscribers to his podcast. There's also, she wouldn't go on that podcast. She did go on the Call Her Daddy podcast, which is usually sex stuff.
It's ladies talking to ladies, right?
Yeah, often about personal stuff. A source familiar with the matter told the Washington Examiner that the Kamala Harris campaign spent over $100,000 just to build a set for her appearance on the Call Her Daddy podcast with Alex Cooper. Not to be mistaken with Alice Cooper. Okay, Alex, young woman. The interview came out in October, was reportedly filmed in a hotel room in Washington, D.C. The campaign also had seven swing state concerts, including performances by Jon Bon Jovi in Detroit, Christine Aguilera in Vegas, Katy Perry in Pittsburgh, Lady Gaga in Philadelphia, and a Two Chainz performance at a rally 3 days before in Atlanta.
Two Chainz is a rapper, for those of you scoring at home.
Yes.
I knew you knew that, though, John.
Well, and so do all of our listeners.
Lesser-known rapper, still a rapper.
But good enough to get paid. I can't believe that. $1 million to Oprah Winfrey to campaign for Kamala Harris. All right. By the way, speaking of very highly compensated people in the media who are on the left politically, Bill Maher had Sarah Isker on his show. Sarah Isker is a conservative podcaster and writer. She spoke at the Roanoke Conference. You know, we're going to have that Roanoke Conference in
that
January.
That was why her name sounded familiar.
She was at the Roanoke Conference either last year or the year before.
Right.
We interviewed her here on the show. Anyway, they are going back and forth summing up Donald Trump's electoral domination, which now has extended to the popular vote. Donald Trump is leading by well over 3.5 million votes nationally and has an outright majority. But here is Sarah Isker, Bill Maher.
But you can't scream about democracy and then have a guy run the table like this and not say, well, it's a mandate, right? Is that right or wrong? Is it a mandate?
Yes, the Harvard Institute of Politics student president came out with an op-ed today talking about how they weren't going to forego democracy for the sake of nonpartisanship. Set aside that they might have wanted to talk to a lawyer before saying their nonprofit was now going to be a partisan organization. But the idea that you're going to be pro-democracy by not giving a voice and allowing other students to hear from speakers that belong to the party that just won through a democratic process, like, that's where the left has a problem. They've become the party of the faculty lounge. They're so condescending. They're so arrogant. And, again, not to beat the dead horse, the whole point is to be exclusionary. They're not accidentally exclusionary. It's the mission statement.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw Kamala was on Saturday Night Live.
By the way, that was a great comment. It's their mission to be exclusionary. It's not just something that's happening. It's not a byproduct. It's the intent. They want to be exclusionary. And then Bill Maher's talking about, saw the SNL Saturday before the election campaign bit with Kamala Harris.
As the losing candidate often is. it worked so well for Hillary. Let's run that back.
Tell you what, let's run back that joke so people hear it. Here we go.
The whole point is to be exclusionary. They're not accidentally exclusionary. It's the mission statement.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw Kamala was on Saturday Night Live, as the losing candidate often is. it worked so well for Hillary. Let's run that back. And it just made me think, I'm sure every single member of the Saturday Night Live cast was a Harris supporter. But what if one of them wasn't? What if one of those cast members was for Trump? Would they have felt comfortable saying so? I really don't think so. They would have had to keep it to themselves. That's not a good place for us to be. I remember when... And that happens even more on the left. And I remember...
If you didn't hear that, he said, and that happens even more on the left. Boy, does it ever. Again, I've been at the intersection of the politics and media for 35 years. And one of my takeaways is that the political left is much more intolerant. They are the most intolerant, narrow-minded people in this country when it comes to politics. They take political differences personally. They are the ones who, when you disagree with them on affirmative action, they call you a racist. When you say, hey, maybe it's time for us to get tougher on crime, we have unparalleled, out-of-control crime, again, you are a racist. When you say, you know, I don't think that men should be competing with girls in high school sports and college sports because they identify as a girl. I mean, they're biological males. They shouldn't be out there on the field. Oh, you're a transphobe and you're a bigot. In other words, it always gets personal. It always gets very intense because they don't want a discussion. They don't want a debate. They can't win it. So it's better just to call names. I see this. I have seen this tendency on the right. I see it far more on the left. Let's continue.
Remember when Elon Musk hosted, and this is well before he was a Trumper. This is 3 or 4 years. He was just the richest man in the world. And a number of the cast members.
This was on Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live. Like, they didn't want to deal with him. They didn't exactly boycott, but they made it plain. And I was thinking, really? You have Elon Musk on your show for a week. You could talk to one of the most interesting, brilliant people the world has ever produced, even about this issue that bothers you so much that he's so rich and lots of people aren't. But no, you don't want to even deal with him. That's what I hate about the left. You're brats. You're brats and you're snobs and people don't like that.
They're brats. They're snobs. People don't like that. Here's David Axelrod, former Obama election guru and chief of staff, talking on CNN over the weekend.
I think Biden has done, you know, programmatically some good things for working people, but the party itself has increasingly become a smarty pants, suburban, college-educated party, and it lends itself to the kind of backlash that we've seen.
In other words, exclusionary, arrogant, full of themselves, completely tone-deaf to culture issues like woke ideology in the schools and in our military, which is dampening, hurting military recruitment. Of course, most of them increasingly don't know people who are in the military. They are the people who are, you know, zealously for the trans issue. And then they kind of got quiet about it because they saw that it was starting to hurt them. And it did hurt them. Over $100 million spent on that ad about Kamala Harris supporting sex change operations for illegal aliens in prison. In prison. She, on the record, saying this. There's no way for her not to, so they just ignored it, just wouldn't talk about it. And they, again, this is where the Republicans did it right. Instead of saying it a few times and then moving on, they said it over and over and over and over again. And they won on that issue. That hurt her. It showed that, yeah, she really is a Bay Area leftist. She really is out of touch on stuff like that. So that was just a wonderful a back and forth here. Scott Jennings says the very people who hate Trump the most made Donald Trump even stronger. Here's Scott Jennings over the weekend again on CNN. They're token conservative. Yes, they've got Republicans on CNN, and they're all anti-Trump Republicans. Like I said, CNN says we need balance. All these anti-Trump Democrats. Let's bring on some anti-Trump Republicans so we can have balance. Scott Jennings, pro-Trump. And man, does he hit the target dead center. Have a listen.
The Democratic Party, you're right, it is hard to lose. You know, Republicans went through this after 2012. And I think about the condition of the Democratic Party. It's been almost fully oriented around Trump for a decade. Mm. I mean, look and look at Biden. I mean, his basic campaign promise initially was to rid the country of Trump and Trumpism. And as he leaves office, Trumpism and the MAGA movement is stronger than ever. So not only are you just dealing with the wreckage of having lost an election, you're dealing with the total failure of the project of the current president as he set it out when he got elected in the first place. So I think part of the answers that you all are seeking are more than just tactical.
I agree.
So some of it is, what are we? Who are we?
What do we stand for?
What do we stand for? And, you know, I think both parties go through this after these kinds of losses. But when you look at how Biden is leaving, the very thing he vowed to rid us of is now the ascendant political movement in this country. It's got to be a pretty demoralizing feeling.
In a stronger position than ever
he's
before.
Never been stronger. He's never been more popular, and he's never been in a stronger political position.
He's never been stronger. That is right. Donald Trump has, think of everything they threw at him. For crying out loud, the indictments, the impeachments, the hoax about Russia collusion that went on for over two full years, ate up over $40 million in investigation costs, investigation being carried out by the former head of the FBI. Think of the attacks to ruin him personally, to ruin him financially. For crying out loud, the two assassination attempts. And then what do the Democrats say after the second assassination attempt? That Trump was a threat to democracy. That Trump was a fascist. They kept it up. They kept it up. All of that. The so-called 34 felonies, which is preposterous. It'll be thrown out shortly. But all of that. And he's stronger than ever. That is a testament to John Carlson's favorite candidate here, Donald Trump. It is a testament to the American people seeing through the BS and making things right. All right, I think it's making things right. Philip Jay with the social media sweep, social media from socialists right around the corner on the commute with Carlson.
Oh, go ahead, John. Ask me. I told you all morning long we're going to have veterans.
Rick James?
No. Well, MC Hammer.
MC Hammer.
Oh, yeah. That's MC Hammer.
This is the sample of the Rick James song, yeah. But sure, yes.
Another example of music
artist almost identical.
Who did serve. Naval Air Station, Moffett Field, California. MC Hammer.
I did not have the hammer on my veteran musical talent bingo card.
How about that?
Happy Veterans Day, and thank you, veterans, for all your service.
Rose was not in the military.
Ooh, you are correct. So then the question becomes, why did this song get played on Veterans Day?
Yeah.
Okay.
And why he shows up on two different reliable lists as veterans who serve, but Phil.
Yeah, apparently Axl Rose has been included. He's the lead singer of Guns N' Roses, thus the Rose in Guns N' Roses. But apparently he has been either put on some of these internet lists because, you know, they don't get fact-checked. But he never served in the military. However, the answer of why he's getting played here, he has a tattoo on his arm of the 32nd Armored Regimental Crest on his left arm, and he got that tattoo in honor of Elvis Presley because that's the regiment in which Elvis Presley served.
There you go.
So
fact check even with our veterans.
I think he's also done concerts for...
And
traveling for the veterans.
Right, yeah, maybe some overseas type stuff, but he's always used, I think, American flag imagery in clothing or attire in concert, things like that. So that's been another
in a good
thing
way.
That he's done.
In a good way. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III's favorite segment of the day, social media from Socialist.
Oh, yeah. Like you talking about, like you've been talking about all of this acrimony after the election loss for Kamala Harris and Team Biden. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. This post was put up by someone whose profile says radio podcast host, hashtag Team Joe, election aficionado. His name is Chris Jackson, and Chris Jackson posted last week, to those attacking my president, and he's included a portrait picture of Joe Biden, let me remind you that Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. is the only person alive to have ever taken down Donald Trump. Let that sink in. Put some respect on his name. So that was the post, and someone responded in the comments file, oh, you're talking about Donald Trump, the only person alive to beat two candidates in the same election? He knocked Joe Biden out of the race for president, and then he ended up knocking out Biden's replacement. So,
all right. When we get back, Alejandro Mayorkas is about to get knocked out as Department of Homeland Security. And related to that, a new border czar is coming to town. Wait until you find out who it is. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's 8:30.
You familiar with this cover song? This might be a real surprise for a lot of our listeners, for veterans that were music artists.
At first, I thought it was Aerosmith. They said, no, I don't think it's Aerosmith.
This is the cover version, Come Together,
uh-huh,
by Soundgarden.
Soundgarden.
Jason Everman was played guitar for a bit with Nirvana. Then he came over, played bass with Soundgarden. He helped with this cover. Served many tours, underlined many tours, in Iraq and Afghanistan. There's
good
our veteran
for
salute.
Him. Whoa.
Another artist surprise here.
All
of
right.
Those who served. And thank you, all veterans.
We've had a bunch of those today, courtesy of the radio legend Mark Christopher doing his homework here. So what we're doing on Veterans Day, every song going into and back from commercial break, either performed by a veteran or a band where there is at least one veteran in the band, or about the song is about the U.S. military. All right. Speaking of getting things done, which is what our veterans always do, Donald Trump announced last night, quote, I am pleased to announce that former ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE director and stalwart on border control, Tom Homan, will be joining the Trump administration in charge of our nation's borders. The borders are, as Trump calls him, his duties include, but will not be limited to, the southern border, the northern border, all maritime and aviation security. Quote, I've known Tom for a long time. There's nobody better at policing and controlling our borders. Likewise, Tom Homan will be in charge of all deportation of illegal aliens back to their country of origin. Congratulations to Tom. I have no doubt he will do a fantastic and long-awaited-for job. All right. You might remember that when he was testifying before Congress a couple of years ago, he got into it with Pramila Jayapal. She was serving as vice chair of the House Subcommittee on Immigration Integrity, Security, and Enforcement.
You have failed to secure the border. You have failed to work with this president to close the three loopholes we've asked for 2 years to close. So if you want to know why this issue exists, you need to look in the mirror. You have failed American people who are not securing the border and closing the loopholes.
Mr. Homan, please respect the chair and the authority of the chair. The time of the gentleman has expired.
I've asked you politely to let me go beyond my time, and you let other people go beyond their time, but not to Tom Homan. He don't get me go beyond his time.
Mr. Homan, we have approved an agreement between the Republicans and the Democrats with the ranking member. We increased the time of one member of Congress who was interrupted by a protest. That is done with the approval of the ranking member. Please respect the chair's authority.
I respect the chair's authority, but the chair...
Mr. Homan!
You work for me. I'm a taxpayer. You work for me.
The witness will suspend.
Well, the witness just got a promotion, Pramila. The witness is now in charge of all things related to the border. And it cannot come at a better time. Did you know that there are currently about 1.3 million illegals who have received due process and have been ordered out of the country? 1.3 illegal aliens under final orders. Get out. They've received their due process. And the Biden administration is just slow walking their removal. Among those 1.3 million are criminal aliens whom Congress has directed ICE to detain and remove. Some of them are not being removed because they're from so-called recalcitrant countries, nations that are refusing to provide the U.S. government with travel documents it needs to facilitate their return. Congress gave Department of Homeland Security, i.e. Alejandro Mayorkas, the mechanism he needs to force those countries to comply. But they've ignored it. Under Section 243D of the Immigration Nationalities Act, according to Andrew Arthur from the Center for Immigration Studies, once DHS, Department of Homeland Security, notifies the State Department that a foreign country denies or unreasonably delays the return of illegals back to their home country, the Secretary of State must order our immigration officers in that foreign country to suspend granting immigrant visas or even tourist visas to people who live in that country. Two of those countries, by the way, are China and India. If we had for one day shut down our visa applications in our consular offices in those countries, they would have immediately said, okay, fine, send them back. But again, they won't do it. Tom Homan's going to do it. And that is a very good thing. All right, while we are talking about countries abroad, someone tell me, please, what the hell is going on in Amsterdam? Here you have Dutch authorities tightening security to protect Jews and synagogues and other Jewish sites after an overnight wave of violence late last week in which Israeli soccer fans were chased in the streets and beaten by crowds in what leaders of both the Netherlands and Israel are calling anti-Semitic attacks, basically a pogrom. Five Jews were hospitalized, according to police, who said they made 62 arrests. Israel's foreign ministry said, thank goodness, all of the injured had been treated and discharged. Israeli fans were in Amsterdam because there was a game between their Tel Aviv soccer team and the Dutch club Ajax. Police declined to comment on the identities of the assailants. They had warned of tensions between Israeli fans and others. I will not be reluctant to tell you who the assailants are. They are believed to be Muslim gangs, youth gangs from Moroccan and the Turkish community in the Netherlands. Youth gangs from Dutch Morocco and Dutch Turkey orchestrated the violence. They planned this. While Israeli soccer fans were walking throughout the streets downtown Amsterdam, they were ambushed by groups of 10 to 15 masked assailants. A Channel 12's Elad Semchayoff said that, quote, Amsterdam police instructed Israelis not to go by taxi because some of the taxi drivers in the city were helping to organize the riots and assisting the gangs. So they're dropping fans off where they would be attacked. King Wilhelm Alexander from the Netherlands. The Netherlands has a monarchy which is much like the British monarchy.
Kind of like a figurehead sort of thing.
More of a figurehead kind of thing. Called Israel's president apologizing, said, we failed the Jewish community of the Netherlands during World War II. We did it again last night. Amsterdam, you'll recall, is the city where the young Jewish girl Anne Frank, who wrote a diary, which later became a huge bestseller, The Diary of Anne Frank, she was turned in to the Germans, she and her family. 75% of Amsterdam's Jews were turned in. They perished in the Holocaust. A young writer named David de Bruijn said, I grew up in The Hague, Amsterdam, the Netherlands, where real and abundant anti-Semitism, from epithets in the street to physical threats to the community's safety, was part of our daily life. As a young boy, I recall how The Hague's soccer hooligans walked the streets under a banner reading, We're hunting for Jews. He said, during my entire life, soccer stadiums in my home country have been filled with lurid chants like, Hamas, Hamas, all the Jews on gas. And my dad was in the commandos. My mom was in the SS. We like to burn Jews because Jews burn the best. In high school, second or third generation Moroccan kids would point and hiss, Hissed, that's a Jew. That's a Jew. As they passed by on their bikes. The local synagogue in The Hague is not recognizable. There's two thick green doors presenting a closed facade to the street. Behind those doors are glass doors that open once additional permission is given. All the windows in the synagogue in Amsterdam are made of bulletproof glass. What the hell is going on in Europe? Again, the anti-Semitism growing. One of the Jews was chased into the local canal, and a group of the anti-Semites posted a video. A Zionist got a free swimming lesson. Whose street? Our street. So again, this was a planned riot in Amsterdam. Dutch authorities say they are tightening security. It is coming up here, 8:49, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570, KVI, right where you need to be. Happy Veterans Day to all you veterans and everyone else. Let's celebrate our veterans.
Chris Henderson, Three Doors Down, U.S. Navy right after high school.
How about that? All right.
80 years ago this month, drafted U.S. Army off to Europe, front lines against Germany, veteran Tony Bennett.
How about that? Who was with us until just recently.
Yeah.
Just recently passed away. Welcome, everybody, to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Well, the one initiative that passed last Tuesday, in fact, the only good news from last Tuesday within the state of Washington for people right of center was the Natural Gas Freedom Initiative. You have the freedom to choose natural gas. It won by 4 percentage points.
Neighbor Diane been holding off on the pipes. She's all wired. She's all set for natural gas. They said, but stop. We got to wait to see what happens.
Now, of course, there's going to be a lawsuit against it. There always is. Whenever a conservative ballot measure passes, there's always a lawsuit. It was that way with three strikes, you're out, for heaven's sakes. And with every other meaningful conservative Republican-sponsored initiative, it was very carefully drafted, with an eye to the bias of our current courts. So feeling good that it will do just fine. I hope you will do just fine this Veterans Day. Looking forward to talking to you again tomorrow. Ahead. Bye.